Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I welcome you to Degenerates in Dreamland.
If we inhale enough noise gas, you could feel free to join in on any of these if you do.
This is a section of lung about the size of an orange, in which you can see brown pine needle looking things in the specimen. You see those? Those are pine needles. What happened? This was the lung of an aviator whose aircraft crashed into a pine forest. In the process of his plane catching fire and burning, he inhaled the pine needles. When the specimen was then autopsied, the physician saw that the pine needles remained in the lung.
Nostrils. Nostrils. Nasal. Nib. Proboscis. Snot blocker. Kazoo. Pecker. Viaduct. Blowhole. Beezer. Antilla airhole. Bazoo. Beagle. Beak. Beezer. Bill. Blowholes. Blowpipes. Boke. Boko, breather, bugle, claret, jug, conch, conch, durant, foghorn, handle, honker, horn, I suppose. Leading article, meerschaum, muffle, muzzle, mares, nasal, orifice, nasal cavity, nib, nose hole, nose trill, nostril, nozzle, olfactories, olfactory, factory, olfactory organ, olfactory pit, pecker, proboscis, protuberance, promontory, rhinarium, Rhineland, schnoz, schnozzle, schnozzola, schnoztrilled, smeller, sneezer, sniffer, snitch, snoot, snorer, snorter. Snotlocker, snotter, snout, snozzle, snuffle, spiracle, trumpet, trunk, tunnels, ventilator, viaduct, whiffer.
If I can find it. The knee. Das Knie. There wanders through the world a knee. It's just a knee, no more. It's not a tent. It's not a tree. It's only a knee, no more. There was a man once in a war, overkilled, killed fatally. Alone, unhurt, remained the knee, like a saint's relic, pure. Since then it roams the world alone. It is a knee now only. It's not a tent. It's not a tree. Only a knee, alone.
The knee. A slice of a body. For instance, what we have here is a slice of a knee, which is about a fourth of an inch thick. And what shows up in this plastinated slice are the muscles, and you can see the striation of the muscles as you hold it against the light. The bone, a thin slice of bone, you can see the composition of the bone. You can see the cartilage. You can see the bruised area in this cartilage here, the dark color. And then you can see the area where the fleshy part was. This is the patella right here. And this was the fleshy part of the leg.
I was 13 and he was 15. And we were going to go to the movies. We went to the Blue Star Shopping Center on Route 22 to see Live or Let Die. And I think his mother drove us. And we sat in the movie next to each other, and he didn't make a move. And nothing happened. And then his father came and picked us up and drove us back to his house. So he said, do you want to come up to mine? And as we went into his room, he closed the door and said, we're not allowed to lock our doors in my house. So otherwise he would have locked the door. So, I don't know, he like roamed around and was showing me stuff, and I was just being sort of polite and showing me all his like toys and junk and silly things that he had, and then proceeded to make the big moves on me. And I was just very innocent, and he was very aggressive and just started kissing me and then just said, take off your shirt. And so I'm sitting there thinking, well, the door is unlocked. And he said, well, you know, he had a little sister who was pestering us. So eventually, I figured someone would just walk in, and he's like, well, no, and asked me, do I want to see it?
I did.
And of course, I want to see it. I mean, I want to know what it looks like. But at the same time, I feel like I'm in this incredibly ominous, dangerous situation.
This is a significant moment here.
Is pornographic happening the way I'm just a little girl? I mean, now I know how much of a little girl I was. I was just 13. I mean, 13 is young. But there I was. It was this mindless thing. And I thought,
he would
look
at me and
I should say, just say, because that's
when I see a junk.
This is what I have to do. So, yeah, so he whips it out, and we both sit and we look at it, and he says, well, do you want to touch it? And I didn't want to. But I did. To get to a safe place.
But Fleece had noticed in treating women that periodically their noses would swell. Now at the time, Freud was also working on the theory of hysteria. And Fleece understood that the noses swell during menstruation and that women underwent psychological changes at that point, which were not unrelated to the kinds of things that were put forth about hysteria. And he began to urge Freud to think more, that the center of this hysteria or neurotic patterns was in what he called the nasal reflex, that there was this sort of reflex action that was occurring that was either precipitating or related to, indicative of, pathologically causal to hysteria. He further noticed that he was able to treat these conditions in some of his patients by cauterization with cocaine. And what is interesting to me too is that, you know, for a while Freud sort of bought into this, and in fact there's this famous and traumatic episode of Emma Eckstein, a patient of Freud's who was undergoing very, very severe depression and hysteria, as it were. And Fleece had persuaded Freud to have her nose operated on. A second operation was done by a friend of Freud's in Vienna, and it was discovered that Fleece had left a cotton ball, a piece of gauze in Emma's nose. Freud eventually recounts that in one of his dreams, he has this nasal image that comes into one of his dreams that he further interprets as having to do with the ways in which dream work transforms looking at the world. And that helped him, because he began to work on interpretation of dreams in the late 1890s or so, that helped him clarify the relationship between unconscious projections and the deeper work of the mind in causing neurosis and hysteria and other conditions. Meanwhile, Herr Fleece up in Berlin, who had written in 1895, or published in 1895, his book on the relation between the female genitals and the nose as seen from a physiological angle. Fleece had extrapolated the fact that this
this would have been caused by some kind of injury. This is a great gaping hole in one side of the brain. It's caused by a gunshot wound. This would probably have been from the 1920s. Most specimens which came to us last summer were from the 1920s. Now, other collections which we get are interesting for other reasons. This summer, we'll be receiving a collection of about 2,500 brains which date to the 1880s. Now, someone might ask why these are going to be useful. But when you consider that diagnosed cases of schizophrenia today are treated with drugs, in the 1880s they were not, what a pathologist will have is an untreated or an unadulterated schizophrenic brain.
Hello?
Yes, we have time for one more call. Go ahead, please.
Because sometimes my name is Joey Kaplan, and sometimes my friends make fun of me because...
Joey, just one second. Can you turn your radio down?
Like on television, I watch characters.
Joey?
Joey, could you turn down? It's making us schizophrenic
okay.
to hear your radio as well.
We'll wait for you.
Yeah, okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
Like sometimes on TV, I watch the political actors and, I mean, the political people, and I just, you know, I try and imitate them, and I try and talk to the television. And I can, you know, I watch cartoons, and I do characters from there. I do like a Martian, you know, the one from Bugs Bunny. It's like, oh dear, I do believe I've forgotten something, the little black Martian.
Right, yes.
And sometimes, you know, I don't know, well, my friends make fun of me, and that's why I'm calling.
For here is the story of an organ liberated from its tyrannical host through an act of revolutionary violence! And yet, it was later reported that dear Mr. Bobbitt, while being driven to the hospital by a friend, a male friend, said, "They better be able to make me a new one." Already anticipating a replacement prosthesis, the freshly castrated Mr. Bobbitt exhibits absolutely no sentimental attachment towards his own native-born organ. Perhaps then it will be given a chance to start a life on its own. Planted near the site of one of the bloodiest battles of the American Civil War, bloody Manassas. What will it be when it grows up? Will it grow into something other than a penis? A tent, perhaps? Or a tree? Yet the possibility of achieving such a fruitful revolutionary mutation is crudely cut short by the hand of a police officer picking the severed joint from among the wild flowers. A new form of state intervention. Furthermore, insult heaped upon injury, the captured organ is not reconnected as a nose or as a toe, but as a penis. The pomo penis accumulates its body of experience away from the one who speaks for it, and yet is finally reconnected, as you recall, in a 9-hour operation, but only a 7-inch knife. At the very point of its previous autonomy. Asked how he felt to perform search and salvage for Bobbitt's old penis in the line of duty, the police officer responded by saying, baldly, "It was different." And it most certainly was. For can John Wayne Bobbitt ever again feel his state-inspected penis, you know, AA, AAA, what, to be truly his own again? To whom, after all, does Pomo penis belong? It has circulated everywhere, beamed by CNN into countless kitchens and bedrooms around the world. Unlike the romantic individualist knee, the Bobbitt it thereby morphs into a kind of universal signifier, belonging at last to everybody. In this sense, Pomo penis is a fitting trigger for Radio Utopos, the radio that is no place, Radio Utopia.
So what happened, let's see. The surgeon operated, and basically what he did was to straighten them. In other words, the phalanges, I guess these are the phalanges, had been pushed to the knuckle. But I had lost a lot of blood, and I think also that the technology at that point wasn't sufficient. I think nowadays you can just kind of zip them back together. But then you couldn't do that, and so even though he'd done this pretty elaborate operation, there was no chance, there was no assurance that the blood vessels would reconnect and that blood would keep flowing to the tip of the fingers. And that's what we had to wait for. We had to see if the operation was successful in that the veins would reattach themselves. At least that's how I understand it, because the problem was blood, no longer blood. And I remember, you know, at the tip of the fingers. So then the wait started, the wait in the hospital. I was on the infectious ward. All the bums, the people that had been collected from the streets were on that ward, the people who had gangrene of the leg or whatever. I remember in the room next to me was a black quadriplegic. I think he was an amputee. I mean, his legs had been completely chopped off and his arms as well, so that he was just a trunk of a person with a head. And my mother was with me, and I remember friends coming and visiting and being very sad. A friend coming and crying, which I found very moving. There, my hand was at the end of my arm, but I didn't have much of a relationship to it. It was mainly the nurses that had a relationship to my hand. I didn't really want to deal with it. Of course, I was dying to know if it was getting blacker. I mean, that was the image. Are my fingers getting blacker? And every couple of hours, the nurses would come to change the bandages. And I remember wanting to look, but not daring to look, because I didn't want to see how black they'd become from the time before. So has it gotten any blacker?
So here we have Freud thinking about the unconscious, having all this information, Fleece designing the universe around the nose. Now he started getting further and further carried away, because now these were cosmic cycles and bodies. And Fleece is credited with finding out or conceiving of the notion of biorhythms. That's his sort of claim to fame. So he is a kind of New Ager. But it seems to me that there crosses this point in time. Must have happened that Freud came upon the conceptions by stumbling around, cigar in mouth, you know, his hands behind his back in the woods in Vienna, that he must have maybe come upon the idea that in fact the unconscious is located in the nose.
And the worst thing was that I was so passive. And I did what I was told because I was a good girl. It was like a game to him. Now that I'm older, now that I think about it, it was a game. It wasn't playful.
It was a very sophisticated game.
It was a game of erotic. And it wasn't loving to... It was just... coerce someone or to seduce someone or to seduce a little girl. It was as if he were 40. And so here was this.
There it was.
There was this mindless thing
I'd never seen before.
And he would look at me and
that I had to be
curious about.
I see it jump,
but
so he could, like, you know, make it move.
Just this.
And flop around all by itself. So not
display
only was it
there,
in horrible situation
things,
this mindless thing, but it has a mind of its own and a body of its own. So it moved around. And I was just appalled. I had no idea that this is what happened, that you could, like, make it move all by itself without touching. And that it just stood up. It stood straight up. It was just, it was like... And when it was like his little ventriloquist dummy that he could make talk to me. It wasn't playful.
And
it
finally,
wasn't erotic.
Either his sister was
wasn't
or
loving.
We put our clothes back on and
just
my mother came and picked us up. And I walked outside on his nice suburban lawn. And his mother was there, and my mother was talking to his mother. And I stared at our mothers.
But then I knew I could never tell
them
so
if they knew what had been going on.
So I could never be in a safe place.
I just wanted to get out of there.
To get to a safe place. But then I knew I could never tell anyone what had happened. So I could never be in a safe place.
Ready for the scream?
Huh?
Go.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was just wonderful. Thanks for listening.
Degenerati in dreamland.